So, yeah, not only that, but I went through like alphabetically my entire Apple Music playlist, and man, I didn't have enough. Like I needed at least like 12 more hours of music. And you know, it really does make you sort of question your choices in the past, some of the music that you downloaded. Like, whew, was not expecting to listen to the entire soundtrack of Rent, but here we are.
Welcome to Debatables. He's Clinton Gutierrez. I'm Clinton Yates. June's here as well. It is January 4th, but most importantly, it's a Tuesday, which leads us to the extremely, extremely necessary question that we have to answer before anything else, which is, how long into the year, Israel, do we do the Happy New Year? I know that this is a point of contention for you, but I want to know if
Well,
you've
it's
evolved in
funny.
your stance.
No, I haven't evolved. It was yesterday. And this year is perfect, right? Because yesterday was the third, right? And that's a Monday. So you get your whole weekend in, you get your Monday, first day of work, haven't seen anybody, Happy New Year. We're done with that. Like, we're done. But the part that, rather than just rant about that, the part that's interesting to me is like, I think this is, and this is so lame. Like, so lame. I probably even shouldn't be saying this, like, on any sort of where ESPN ears can hear me. I think it's what I'm best known for. I think me ranting about not wishing me New Year's, Happy New Year's after January 3rd is what I'm best known for. Like, there's people on the internet, like, just sending me messages all the time, and I'm just like, wow. Like, I don't have a stronger take in my entire sports history. It's just this. And I'm like, man, I gotta come up with something better. I did. Like early on, I did sit on like, Baker Mayfield was a bust, and I know this is going to transition into, but then he had that great rookie season. So I'm like, well, I can't hang on to that one. So what, and it's this and using your blinkers, I guess, is the other thing that I was like famously known for saying on Around the Horn on a FaceTime is just use your turning signal. But the Happy New Year thing, yeah, it seems to be what I'm most famous for, which is pretty sad.
June, before we get to the Browns, where are you on Happy New Year extensions to friends and family as we get through the calendar?
After the first week, I don't need it anymore. Like, the glow of the new year has gone. Like, I think I'm a little bit longer than Izzy is in terms of like the acceptable time frame to say Happy New Year people, but like
3 full days. Plenty of time. Plenty of time.
I'll give it till the next weekday that is the new year. So the new year was on what? Saturday this year. So I don't need it after the following Friday. We've gone too far. If you hit the
Well,
each weekday as we lead up to, because you might not see somebody in the context of your life, that's fine. Don't give me another Saturday full of Happy New Year's when last Saturday was the actual New Year. A week is
right.
longer.
But it also speaks to how good of a friend that is, right? If the first thing that they say to you is Happy New Year, you guys aren't good friends. Like, your good friends don't get, like, come on. Like, it's Monday, whatever. You know, it's like, oh, Happy New Year, what's going on with you? No, that's something you say to a complete stranger. So, yeah, I'm just, if you're at small talk, it reminds me of small talk. I hate small talk. Like, I'm first person with the headphones on the plane. So, yeah, it's not a comfortable conversation.
Izzy, when is the latest that someone said Happy New Year to you that set this off in you? Because like there
Oh,
has to
like
be some sort of event that happened.
February. Yeah, it's been like month later. It's like, oh, I haven't seen you. Well, you haven't seen me since like, I don't even know. Like, I'm gonna think of something terrible, so I don't want to say it. But yeah, it's been a lot. Yeah, you haven't seen me in a long time. Okay, just say hello. Fill me in on what you've been watching on Netflix before you wish me a Happy New Year,
All
please.
right, Alabaster, you heard him mention it. Baker Reagan Mayfield. I happen to know his middle name
Yep.
because this is part of the reason why I'm so winning on Around the Horn. That's a joke for you guys from last year. What's our first topic?
First topic, do you think last night was the last time you'll see Baker Mayfield in a Browns uniform?
Israel, I'll let you start first here since you're closest to these teams with disaster quarterback situations in Miami.
Wow, it's entirely unnecessary. But yeah, I do believe so. And like, the first thing I did when, thinking about this was just go back to his draft. And you think of, the two guys who have been successful or largely successful in that draft class were Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. Like, Baker Mayfield started off strong, but then kind of fizzled out. And I don't know if this is just a trend. I don't know if this is something that maybe people should, look at in the future, but it feels like the physical attributes really need to be there now for a quarterback, whether it be the size with Justin Herbert, whether it be, the size and arm strength with Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson's athleticism. There needs to be something there other than, oh, wow, he can really read a defense and, can be accurate at times. Because look, I believe Tua Tagovailoa can read defense as well. I believe he, I know it's not who we're talking about, I believe he is an accurate as heck passer. But without that standout sort of physical attribute, or if he was, you know, 4 inches taller or something like that and could be sort of the prototype quarterback, there's going to be things you can take advantage of. There's going to be sort of weak spots. And it feels like, you know, if you're going to draft a quarterback high, except for maybe like Mac Jones is probably the best exception so far, he better have some obvious physical skill. And it just feels like with Baker, it's not there. He's not faster than guys. He doesn't have a bigger arm. He doesn't really read defenses especially well, which is not really a physical attribute. But it just doesn't seem like it's there. And you've seen enough of it in, what, 4 seasons now to say, okay, like your choices are either to make him one of the top paid in the league, not a great choice, or to try to move on and see what happens with your next guy. And I think that's probably going to be the case there.
Yeah, I also think that this speaks to like a greater issue in how the Cleveland Browns went about drafting Baker Mayfield, because it was the same draft that Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen were in. And I think at the time, everyone kind of looked at Baker Mayfield as the safer pick among those guys. I mean, there was all the controversy around Lamar when he was coming out about whether or not his physical attributes, whether or not his playing style was going to translate. And I think that this is basically the ground that the Browns have sowed for themselves, where they drafted a quarterback that was safe, that didn't necessarily have any of the standout physical attributes and maybe had a lower ceiling. But now they've gotten to a point where his physical attributes aren't able to make the players around him better. It's not like Baker doesn't have people around him that are talented. Like, they've got a good running game. They got Nick Chubb. They had Odell and Jarvis Landry. There is a bunch of talent on this team, and Baker Mayfield simply isn't maximizing the talent on this roster because he doesn't have the physical attributes to do that. On top of, I don't think being able to separate himself from like a, you know, reading defense standpoint, which I think where Mac Jones really separates himself is that he's really kind of nailed down this intellectual part of the game when he doesn't necessarily have the mega arm or the running ability. And I think that's kind of his standout trait. Whereas Baker Mayfield's like good at a bunch of stuff, but not good enough to actually separate himself and make the players around him better.
You mentioned the injuries right there, Alabaster. Put that up again. I just want to show people that, if you can, in terms of all of the stuff he's been dealing with. Torn labrum, left foot soreness, right knee contusion. That just means broke down. And I don't mean that to blame him. I just mean that certain guys in the league, you get hit, you get hurt. That's a real factor when it comes to him. The development has not been there from the intellectual standpoint, I think, because of the physical matters in terms of his ability to ever feel right in an NFL situation. Now, there is something interesting I'd like to mention about the draft strategy that the Browns took on, which is that at the time, I remember thinking, are they really trying to replace Johnny Manziel with a better version of Johnny Manziel in terms of just the dude? And they did. And I don't think that they realized that that meant that the ceiling that they were rooting for was not ever really that high. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, you might have gotten the sort of I can stay on the field version, I guess, technically, of Johnny Football, but that didn't mean you were going to get anything that anybody wanted. And that's what's so strange about this is that, you know, it's just plain a job of poor scouting, I would say, in terms of talent evaluation from the Browns front office. I mean, I talk about this all the time, is that quarterback is the worst coached position in the league. Guys very rarely get in the league and suddenly get better because they just plain had a plan to make them better. But if you start with a product, a clay mold that was never designed to be anything that great anyway, Izzy, you're screwed, you know?
And do you remember, Clinton, do you remember what the talk was to get Baker Mayfield up to number one then? I just remember, I think it was a Cleveland GM, I forget who it was exactly, but it was basically swagger. Like, hey, if you talk to him, you'll understand why I think he's... And it's like, right. What? And so, you know, you go through year after year after year of people pushing quarterbacks higher up the draft board than they need to be because of need and how, you know, important that position is. I call it the Mark Sanchez effect. And it just happened in this draft where you had him and Josh Rosen. And like, it's just, what do you do? And again, the two guys that sort of made their way into something was Lamar Jackson because he's unbelievably fast and quick. And Josh Allen because he's got a huge arm and, you know, has some athleticism there and a, you know, huge physical body as well. So it just makes me think that those are the chances you should take. I mean, unless you're Bill Belichick and have this great system in New England, those are the chances you should take on these quarterbacks. And early on, you're going to know if your guy is special. Baker Mayfield, not that. Like, I don't think, you know, going back to what I was saying before, because we're sort of evaluating that right now with Tua, I don't know if he is special yet, right? Can he be a top 15 quarterback or top 20 quarterback and win you? Yeah, probably. But is he special? Eh. So do I want to pay him? No. And so Baker Mayfield, that same situation right now, and I think it's a pretty obvious answer.
Alabaster?
So a couple things. One, obviously criticisms of Baker Mayfield are totally fair, but in criticizing the draft process, we should remember that Bill Belichick, the GOAT, Bill Belichick, he wanted to trade up to number two if Baker Mayfield fell below Saquon Barkley or Sam Darnold. So he was very highly regarded. The second point is that this is about his accuracy, and this is someone who is a historically accurate college quarterback and a historically accurate rookie, and that magically fell apart in his second season and has never come back. It's bizarre.
It's not, and that's magical. The part where you can just maybe blame injuries, right?
Yeah, I was just telling you about development. Sorry, is that, yeah, okay, you can throw it against Big 12 defenses. Big deal. I've seen pro days where the defenses were doing more than what Baylor used to do a couple years ago when they were winning a lot of ball games. I mean, what I'm saying is that's my point. What you got from him early is all you were ever going to get. And that's the kind of thing that NFL teams mess up all the time. They don't have plans in place to develop guys, and they completely misevaluate what they have coming out. And next thing you know, you look like the Chicago Bears, or you're running through quarterbacks left and right. The only team that's done it more are the Browns. I mean, this is, to me, I'm not upset if I'm Baker Mayfield in terms of what I think I've gotten wronged as, but he had a chance. He did not have a chance with the Browns, and that's evident now.
And what did Bill Belichick ever really do in terms of picking quarterbacks, right? I think that's his probably one weak spot. Like, he never found I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo probably was the best competent backup to Tom Brady. And, you know, he's okay.
Does Ryan Mallett not do that for you? Is he not good enough in this conversation? And also, I mean, just to point – and just to point out, though
– accident.
Bill Belichick had an opportunity to draft Lamar Jackson. Like, he was right there on the table, and he didn't do it. So – you know, it's never necessarily been the you know, we could talk about Bill Belichick and his defenses and his ability to maximize the payroll on the roster, but quarterback, you know, Tom Brady was obviously a late round draft pick, and he's never drafted a good, you know, starting quarterback other than Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, this is, I don't necessarily have the greatest amount of trust in Belichick's judgment at the quarterback system, just because, honestly, we haven't seen him have to make a lot of those choices over the course of his tenure as a Patriots coach.
What do we do though with this? Like, is it sad that sort of, let's just say it's the time has come for Baker and they're going to move on. Like, are you a Browns fan? Are you sad because it's like, wow, we built all this and it seems like we're good around him and we're going to have to quote unquote start over? Or do you look at like veterans and say, all right, we're going to just go ahead and get somebody, I don't know, a Matt Ryan, maybe try to trade for somebody who has done it before, kind of proven, and plug him in? And because then it's a must-win situation if you're the Browns. Then it's just like, all right, we got a guy who is entrusted, and so now we have to get, you know, AFC Championship game or further.
I don't think you have to be in a must-win. I think you can get to something where you just get back to respectability, because they went from complete doldrums to America's team to back to an embarrassment. Let's stop swinging so wildly within the pendulum and just maybe make the playoffs 2 years in a row. You know what I'm saying? Like, with a veteran, because you've got a core defense there that's pretty good in the secondary as well as on the line. I don't think you blow it up. I don't think you do that at all, but I don't think you also have to go for broke. There's plenty of veterans that are out there that are better than Mayfield. And that's not to say that Mayfield is terrible, but I don't think he's a starter in this league. You know what I mean? All the things that you guys mentioned that adds up between injuries, accuracy, and swagger being the only thing that he's bringing to the table, which is not effective when you can't hit guys 7 yards away to get a first down and continue a game. But
has he tried it, though? Has he ever tried dancing in the pocket to see if the defenders will all of a sudden say, hey, that looks pretty good, I'm going to stop
that. It's like that commercial where they have the baby out and the guy's like, oh, look, they're burping the baby. And he's like, oh, man, that's going to fool the defense. You know, like, that's what I imagine is the next extension of the Browns offense.
So
dancing ability, though, is never exactly correlated with, you know, whether or not you're actually going to make a starting quarterback. Because I feel like, I remember when Baker got drafted number one overall, there was the video of him going around where he was, you know, doing all the dances, really feeling himself. And everyone's like, look at the swagger this guy has. It's the intangibles. Like, that guy's going to win us a Super Bowl.
I said I knew he was a good leader when he was on the board at the Cleveland baseball team's game. And when they put him on the close-up on the big board, he just pointed to a guy who immediately flipped him a beer, and he just shotgunned it right there. And I was like, see, that guy's a leader. That swag matters when you're on the big screen at a baseball game. Turns out it doesn't matter at all in Monday Night Football when you're getting popped by the Steelers. What's up, Charlie?
So do you guys see a future for Baker Mayfield as a starter on another team? I mean, this is a guy who, like, for all of his warts, he was top 10 in QBR last year. And they nearly beat the Chiefs in the playoffs. Who made the Super Bowl?
The only team that's going to show him any sort of value or believe that is going to be the Browns. They're going to say, okay, well, last year top 10 QBR, we know what he was. Maybe we didn't have the right combination of receivers rather than just put it all on OBJ and maybe give him another try. I don't see another team that's close that says, all right, we're going to, not unless, you know, he becomes at a bargain. That's the other thing is, I believe only Cleveland is going to pay him that, you know, top of the line type of quarterback money. Nobody else will. So if Cleveland decides they're not going to, then do you get him at a bargain and say, all right, maybe we have something here, but I don't know the team. Like if Carson Wentz can go to Indianapolis and turn them into some version of a contender, then I think Baker can possibly do that, but it has to be pretty ready-made and he has to be like perfect in terms of physically, like he can't have any sort of injuries or anything that's going to drag him down.
Something I think has been confusing for me too, building off the injuries thing, is that, you know, over the course of the season, he's talked so much about the fact that he has a shoulder injury, and he talked about it last night after the game too. Like, if you have a shoulder injury and it's affecting you that much, why are you on the field? If it's going to be affecting you that much and you need to constantly bring it up and remind people that you are injured and that's why your accuracy is that bad, like, isn't it better for the team moving forward for you to not be on the field so that they actually have a competent quarterback in their center who can throw a ball and can make accurate passes because their left shoulder isn't injured?
But this is a difficult situation. Is he getting batted balls knocked down the line because his left shoulder hurts or because he's not seeing, you know, the path, or if he's not throwing to the right person, or if, you know, teams have just figured him out, or if he's a little shorter and they can just get there? Like, that's not, hey, my left arm is hurting thing. That's just like, hey, you're not seeing the throwing lanes.
Yeah, but that's
which
also,
is exactly on, why this whole in, this whole situation has, like, the injury situation has been bothering me, that he's brought it up so many times. It's like, it's always the go-to excuse for him this year that he's not performing well, when there's clearly other things at play beyond the fact that you are hurt and it is affecting how the way you play on the field.
If nothing else, though, it's affecting morale, and it's affecting morale in terms of the way that they were allowed to do the contract negotiations as to whether or not he was going to be there. So when you throw all those things into one, you simply have a bad quarterback situation, which is why I don't think this is going to happen with the Browns. There's just been too many things along the timeline. They could have chosen to give him the money and say, hey, get healthy, you're our guy, here's some money, we'll shut it down. They didn't. They tried to split the difference on that and let him play so that he could feel like he was empowered. That didn't work because he's not very good. And so now they're kind of stuck in this place where they're like, you're both hurt. Neither one of us apparently like each other very much, but we both need each other. That's a terrible situation, but that's Browns football, and that's why they've been deplorable for 20 years.
And I think it's a byproduct of the fact that they didn't go big when they drafted Baker. Like, they could have gotten a guy who had a higher ceiling like Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, which I think everyone was saying at the time. This is not like retrospective history where we know, you know, now that Lamar and Josh Allen are both very good. Like, Baker, everyone knew back then that he didn't have as high a ceiling, and the Browns made the safer choice by going after him. And it's kind of helped, you know, let them to this situation where they're kind of in between, and they're at a point where, like, if they decide to keep him, you know, you're wasting a number one overall pick, but you also almost waste that because you didn't go for that, you know, boomer bust guy in Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson.
You got a lot on you, Charlie. Are you writing a book on Baker, Ray, and Mayfield?
No. I'm sorry. I'm just saying on this network, the network where we panned the Bills for taking Josh Allen at number 10. I cannot let
We didn't pan.
I didn't work for ESPN back then.
Not to mention, there were plenty of people who saw the upside of what Josh Allen was. He was too big and too strong for a team to not take a chance on him. You think about the Carson Wentz example that Izzy just brought up. There was precedent for what this was going to be. Baker was another guy who was just throwing it around the Big 12. It was safe, but the safe was stupid. You know what I'm saying, June? Like, it didn't make sense in that particular talent gap. You're exactly right on that, June. I don't think that, it might have been a little wild at the time for the Bills to do that, but they needed to take a risk, and they got it. And look how it turned out.
And that's why they're in the position they are now. Yes. Because they took that risk, they got a guy who's developed an elite quarterback. They got clowned. They didn't care about it. And now that they're in a position to be competitive for the AFC East for years to come.
In 2018, I did believe that Baker Mayfield as the number one pick would be a bust. I was quickly, I guess, proven wrong by his rookie season. And though I want to gloat about it now and saying, hey, he shouldn't have been the number one pick, I also thought Josh Rosen would be the best quarterback of the bunch, and I believe I called him Dan Marino. I think
I
called him
Dan Marino. I'm going to be honest, I thought Josh Rosen was going to be the best of that group.
Not great. All right, what's the next topic? That's enough discussion about quarterbacks who can't seem to get out of their own way.
All right, we're moving on to a discussion about the sanctity of records. We have the perfect panel for this today. And it is Cooper Kupp right that any records broken this year deserve an asterisk because of the extra game?
Okay, so I'm going to go first on this as I'm in Los Angeles, and because Cooper Kupp, as a member of my fantasy football team, the Colonizers, was lighting up the league all season and has been for multiple years. Separate discussion. Now, here's what Cooper Kupp said. what those guys did in 16 games, it wouldn't seem right to, I don't know, for those to be broken in 17 games. There's two things about this that I really, really enjoy. Number one, I've told you I've been a big fan of Cups for a while. He has sort of come out as a savant of football, like talking more than he's ever talked. And he's turned into this personality that is really likable. He had that one clip where he was saying all those words, using all the verbiage to talk about the play that he got. And now he's speaking very candidly about something that personally affects him. Like, this is actually a very sort of noble stance to take, considering he's the one that's going to be affected. And I agree with him. I don't have to go crazy about it because I'm not over here worrying about who's got record books and what's in them. But I do think that for the rest of my life, I will look at the 2021 season as the delineation point in which many records were broken. Now, lastly, TJ Watt, he's going to probably break the sack record in a more games of a season, but he will have done it in less games because of injury. So his stance to me, I think Cup is actually very diplomatic in doing this, and it shows a side of him that I think we've learned a lot about this season, too.
I love the history nerd, like the aspect of this too. Like, it's one of those things where you're like, you're thinking about the greater picture of like the impact of these records, what they mean, what they stand for. I think something that we think about in baseball all the time too, where you're contextualizing different eras against each other. I think this is one of those points where I think it's awesome that an athlete is thinking about this in this way, because I love when the athletes love the sport that they're playing in the same way that like us as fans love the sport and are able to talk about it. And so this is one of those things where I think it's just going to delineate the fact that we're entering a new era of football where there are 17 games. And, you know, this has happened in football before where more games have happened. And, you know, yeah. I don't think we necessarily look at like Tom Brady's like touchdown record from that season where negates out anything that happened in football the previous 50 years or before then.
Dan Fouts or whoever, yeah.
Right. So it's one of those things where it's just like, we're entering a new era of football. And I think the fact that he's acknowledging this, I think it's awesome. The fact that he's thinking about football in this kind of historical context.
Yeah. I would like to give fans more credit than needing an asterisk, because let's say Cooper Kupp gets this record. Well, first of all, the Triple Crown record of leading the league in receiving yards, touchdowns, and receptions, that doesn't matter if it's 16 or more games. It's right. Just leading, right? So that one is legitimate. But he's not actually getting a crown that he has to walk around with for the rest of his life, right? So if the fans are looking in their record books and saying, well, look at all these records that were broken after 2020, well, they're going to be like, oh, okay, yeah, because the season was 17 games. I still recognize these players as being great, but there's nothing that is no little sort of asterisk that needs to be placed there for them to sort of organize their thoughts. Like, okay, we get it. Because pretty soon there's going to be 18 games. And so what are we going to do? Have like a double asterisk section for that, you know, 4 or 5 year span where there was only 17 games? It's okay. It's okay for us to just recognize what's there and what's new and how this works. Because, you know, there's going to be more games. There's going to, you know, we might even get to a 20 game season by the time I die. Who knows? And so, I don't think it's that huge of a deal. Like, do I think that Cooper Kupp should be thought of as one of the greats, one of the best wide receivers of all time? I think he's putting together a resume that can tell you that, yes. And by the end of his career, if he stays healthy, probably going to be one of those guys and should or deserves some level of record, if you will. I think everybody's going to say, okay, is he Jerry Rice? They're not going to say, Jerry Rice only played 16 games. Maybe he was better. I think they're just going to assess it however they want to assess it.
Alabaster.
Izzy, I got a question for you. How many games do you think it would take Tua to break the single season passing record? 25?
If you gave him some receivers like Cooper Kupp, perhaps it will only take him 17 games, you know? But
I like the idea of awarding crowns, though, to like every sports record holder and then like mandating those athletes to walk around wearing those crowns. Like, I want Hank Aaron to be wearing like a home run record crown and walking around like for 50 years after the fact,
right,
with that crown.
That is crazy, though, right there, that Mike Ditka holds the rookie tight end receiving yards record. Mike Ditka, like, I don't even know how many people, you know, south of 30 would tell you that he was a tight end, Ditka. They'd probably assume he was a linebacker or something and just was like, he's just mean and angry, so he must be on defense all the time.
Mike Ditka, Dick Butkus sort of overtime gel is very real in terms of history. But I was going to say this, like, how long, speaking of walking around wearing crowns, like, how long are we going to continue to refer to things as the record books? Like, I imagine that there's some guy somewhere deep in Canton.
Like, I love
the actual
spot.
Books, you know, and Cooper. Oh, Cooper. It's like Indiana Jones. You know, you've got to cross the thing, pick the
a
book,
record
and
scroll.
Do all this stuff. Like, when are we going to stop actually using that word?
Record the records books. Drive.
The records Wikipedia. Like, the records.
The record PDF page.
You know what I'm saying? Like, exactly. Like, it's going to be not in our lifetimes, but I can't wait until books are just out of the discussion.
The record iPads.
Record. Yeah. The record tablets. Yes. Like, returning to the. Okay.
The record AR glasses. Like, yeah. That's eventually what it's going to turn into.
The record NFTs. Okay, we've gone too far. What's the next topic, Alabaster?
All right, guys, it's time to play a game.
Okay.
And that game is Whodunit. We're going to give you a quote.
I like this game.
You're going to tell us whodunit. All right, first
quote. You know, Dominique's not here, so you can put the guy with the hat on it, okay? He's the only one that complains about it. Okay, right. We need, what's his name? There we go. Thank you. Thank you. That's the whodunit we like. Can we get the sound again, possibly, so we can do this all properly? Wait. There we go. Okay. I feel appropriately mysterious now.
All right, ready for the first quote? All right, let's do it. I mean, you can't have a bad day when you take the boat to work. It's impossible. I don't care if I go 4 for 24. And your choices are Klay Thompson, Nikola Jokic, LeBron James, or Bam Adebayo?
Okay, I'm going to go first here because there is a Miami representative on this, but I'm going to use my Instagram detective knowledge as to say Klay Thompson's the only person on this list I've ever seen actually take a boat to work. So
have,
I'm going
huh?
to assume it's him. Yes, he's done it on IG where he's gone to practice or gone to the facility via his boat. This is actually something that he has done publicly that I have seen.
So
with
it's got to be Klay talking about his first game back right? Because it's not Bam. Bam isn't playing for another month or so.
This could be a distraction, but that's just my personal knowledge of the situation, June.
Taking a boat to work, though, is Super Bowl quarterback winning, Super Bowl winning quarterback kind of swagger, though.
Okay, so what are your guesses? I'm guessing Klay.
I'm going with Klay, too, just based on what you said, because I was flummoxed by this one. I had no idea who it
Have
could
you
possibly
not
be,
seen
but Klay makes sense.
Of him
I haven't seen that either.
There's a lot of Klay on the internet that I have to catch up on. I haven't caught it yet.
Okay, what do we got?
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
I mean, you can't have a bad day.
What? What
you take the boat to work. It's impossible.
I told you.
I don't care if I go 4 for 24.
Like, the hat is amazing.
I had not seen that clip, but I knew it was Klay because there are many on the internet of him and that exact
that
camera
sounds
position.
Sounds like a guy who doesn't have to clean up his own boat when he's done. Because that's the pain in the butt, right? Like, you think it's, oh, yeah, let's go to the boat. Let's go grab dinner. Let's go to work. And then after you're done, it's like, it's a full, like, half an hour there. You got to just clean it out. And otherwise, it's just going to be, you know, a disaster. So, you know, it sounds like a guy with some money problems.
So Klay's dad, Michael, he works in L.A. because he's the color guy on the L.A. Lakers radio. And I talk to him every once in a while. I know, right? Humble brag over here. Boat life. Anyway, I'm trying to get a name drop in here, and he won't even let me. So, and I asked Michael about him the other time. I asked him about him the other day, Klay, because I was like, yo, he looks like, you know, Klay's obviously feeling better. He's out here on boats. And he just wrote back, he's having a great time. That was it. We love Klay. It's good. What's next?
Klay is probably the most entertaining off-the-court guy just because he just is pretty normal. Like, he just doesn't act like a guy who's, you know, recognized by every other person who sees him. So that makes him in itself, in him, you know, by himself, just one of the more entertaining guys.
Very is he likeable. Still single-handedly keeping the newspaper industry alive? Like, is he still reading the newspaper before games with a physical copy?
He's still showing up to practice in a 77 uniform because he's mad he didn't make the 75 list. So his petty knows very few bounds, which we enjoy very much. What's next?
All right, next quote. We got a spicy one. I think the alleged ESPN bias is something to do, if there is any, with the 11 national championships, which is a lot more than two.
Oh, I know.
I don't know why anybody would think ESPN is our network. I'm just glad we don't go 30 years between winning championships. And your choices are A, Phil Jackson, B, Gino Auriemma, C, Larry Bird, or D, Sue Bird.
Oof, man. Why are you getting us into this hot water, Faster? Like, because this quote is based on another quote from somebody at our network who's clearly important to this. Apparently I'm just paying attention too much.
I have just exactly not clued in enough, apparently, especially on ESPN, on ESPN or creating news. Gino Auriemma sounds like it makes sense, but I don't really get the context.
Yeah, the national championship
here.
Thing is the thing, right?
Okay, so yeah. Since I'm apparently the only one that did the homework, a couple of days ago, Muffet McGraw, former Notre Dame coach, she was like, yes, ESPN is definitely a UConn network. They're biased. Bango. Thank you for that. That was not pre-planned. That's what she said. And so Auriemma must be clapping back. That's hilarious, actually. We're going all in. Final answer, Gino Auriemma. I'm just glad we don't go 30
I think the bias has something to do, if there is any, with the 11 national championships, which is a lot more than two. I'm just glad we don't go 30 years between winning championships, so maybe NBC ought to help them a little more.
Okay. Do any of you guys know Gino at all or have been around him at all?
Because I've been in the same room as him once, and I did not talk to him because he was just too intimidating.
That's an interesting part, because like obviously him and Candace Parker don't get along necessarily, and there are enough people who he has rubbed the wrong way, which just kind of makes me wonder, like, is he even a likable person? Like, I haven't been around him enough to know that, but like, he's got to be, like, if you dislike Gino Auriemma, you have got to really dislike Gino Auriemma, because he just keeps winning. And it's just like, even when he's down, like he is this year or currently at the moment, whatever, until Paige gets back, like he can still talk that trash and be the winner in the conversation.
Like, Saban's like the only other guy who has the background to be able to do something similar at this point. Because, like, I remember before Saban got to Alabama, like, Alabama was not on ESPN all the time. Like, not like it is now. Like, it's a result of them winning. It makes sense.
No, the best part about this, I don't know if we have this racked up to go again, but this is one of the things that I point out a lot when I listen to white guys of a certain age make jokes. Like, when Matt Rhule was talking about Jay-Z, there's always a little chuckle where they've convinced themselves that they are really, really funny. Play this clip again and look at the listen to the quick early chuckle he has after he mentions the championship.
I think the bias has something to do, if there is any, with the 11 national championships.
There it is.
Which is a lot more.
When they hear that quick chuckle,
I'm just glad
you know that they're ready to rock. You know that they're ready to rock when that quick crow hop of a chuckle.
He should have followed up with, you know, are they making a Lakers documentary and Lakers movie because they were bad for so many years or because they kept winning championships and were interesting? I wonder why that is. I wonder why all these TV screens are focused on these people holding up the trophy. That doesn't make any sense to me. But hey, we'll let Notre Dame figure it out.
Exactly. The chuckle. It's always a giveaway. You always know something good's coming after the chuckle. What's next?
Once I saw Greg Popovich give you the five thing when he was going through the on the parade, and I was, once Greg Popovich can talk smack and just comfortably, and it's just, there's nothing you can do about it. Once he can do it, like, every coach in the league, every coach that's won championships can talk all that noise.
So, all right, what's next?
Guys, before we move on, actually, we have one more piece of spicy sound from Gino that I want you guys to hear.
Yeah, I guess Muff is bored. You know, I guess she doesn't have a whole lot to talk about.
And come on, Gino.
Usually when she was coaching, when she did talk, nobody listened anyway. So,
wow.
I guess she figured she's
going to talk. Oh, my God.
This is
disrespectful.
I don't need that. Right? What
but
doing
this is the time for him to do that. They, you know, people are kicking him while they're down. They're out of the top 10 for what, the first time in 16 years, something like that. Like, all right, well, I'm just going to go ahead and pop off then. If you guys want to talk,
that's exactly what that is. He is popping off. If you look up pop off in the Wikipedias, not the record books or the dictionaries, that's the person you should find. That was a pop off.
All right, guys, we got another game. And that game is, what are the chances? We'll give you a topic, and you tell us the chances. First one. What are the chances Caleb Williams follows Lincoln Riley to USC?
This is your account there, Clinton.
This is my account. There's a lot of discussion about this, but I'll tell you this part. There's a lot of people at USC who don't – rather, a lot of USC fans who don't necessarily just want to see the Oklahoma reboot in – the Coliseum.
Why?
You know what I mean?
Like, Explain that one to me.
I just think that there's a lot of people around, there's a lot of pride around the USC program where people seem to think that this got to be something new and something fresh that he brings along. This kid Jackson Dart has been here for a while. He's probably gone, but like, who people seem to like. I think that there's success that some people want, but I think that it's going to be, I think the reason why is because if that doesn't work, then you've kind of already torpedoed your own cause potentially. You see what I'm saying? Not that it shouldn't work, but if you bring a guy over who was where you were before, when the idea of you coming to begin with was to inspire all this hope and all these things, it's just, I don't know.
June looks like he wants to mock you.
It's a 50% chance of it happening. I hope it does happen.
Pride is the excuse. When pride is the excuse, like USC.
I'm not a USC fan.
Decade.
Yeah, I know. I'm not a USC fan. I'm just telling you the tenor. That's all I'm saying.
And I'm just saying that, USC hasn't been good in a decade. Get your pride out of the way. Win football games. And
one decade. They were good during the Pete Carroll era. Other than that, since I've been alive, they haven't been a significant a period of time where they've been good.
Yeah. The Pete Carroll era was formative for me personally in terms of watching college football. So in my memory, USC was this glamorous franchise or glamorous college football franchise. And OJ.
Caleb Williams can go anywhere. He can go anywhere, right? Obviously, the 1 year at Oklahoma, taking over for Rattler, and he ended up leaving. Kind of sucks for Oklahoma. Both those guys end up possibly going somewhere else because it's possible that Williams comes back here. But who's doing who the bigger favor? Because if Caleb Williams follows Lincoln Riley to USC, he is doing Lincoln Riley the 100% solid there, because it is the most difficult thing to do is to get, a competent, high-quality quarterback in there and then recruit around him. You're definitely making life a heck of a lot easier. Not only do you have the quarterback situation settled for another couple years, but that's going to entice some pass catchers to say, hey, I want to go play quarterback with that guy. He's a proven commodity there. So I don't think it works the other way around necessarily. I don't think Lincoln Riley is doing Caleb Williams that many favors by bringing him to USC. He's going to have as many eyes on him no matter where he goes. He'll probably have a better chance of winning a championship if he goes to Georgia, for example. So I don't know if it's, it definitely is something that Lincoln Riley will benefit more in this situation.
I don't know about that, man. I mean, I do think that you're right in your initial assessment, but I don't know that the eyeballs get bigger than big-time coach from Oklahoma going to SC, taking his quarterback with him, and all of a sudden them being on the national stage. I mean, college football is a big deal, but that's one situation where the isolation of the Pac-12 actually makes the spotlight brighter rather than being in the SEC, in my personal opinion. You know what I'm saying? Georgia, sure.
Not if they're ranked in the 20s and they're just kind of middle, they're just the team where the quarterback is the best. I think if you are, an LSU quarterback, if you are a Georgia, Alabama quarterback, you are going to be spotlighted every single game. You're going to be thought of in the Heisman conversation initially. Not that he wouldn't at USC, because we've already seen Heisman-like potential from him. But yeah, I think if he's worried about winning, if he's worried about putting himself in the best possible situation to garner the spotlight, I don't think he has to follow Lincoln Riley there. I think he can do that better in other places.
I would agree with you, but I will say this. The second he steps on campus at USC, he becomes a Heisman candidate. That's just how that brand operates, and that's the reality, June, is that whether or not they're winning games in the Pac-12, they've been turning out pros for 40 years, and they put out Heisman winners. That's what they bank on, and that's what they would probably very much be about if that kid showed up. So the expectation levels would be through the roof, which is why I think it might change things, but
is this the new recruiting, though? Because you talked about, hey, they don't want sort of an Oklahoma redo over here, but why not? If you're going after recruits, the top quarterback recruit in the country, you don't know if he's going to be great. You don't know. You used to have a guy you've seen play for most of one season, and why not just bring him to your place? Just because he's been somewhere else doesn't mean he's used goods.
Listen, you sound like a rational, thoughtful, thinking human being.
That's getting me nowhere. You're right.
Right. We're talking about USC boosters and fans. The whole idea is that everything is over the top and they're willing to do whatever it takes. But they also have very specific tastes as a result of what happens. California boys who were doing – there's a whole sociological experiment I could do on what is USC Trojan football that I'm not going to do on this program, this fake television program known as Debatable, because I just don't have the time. But they're as picky as they get for as good as they are. And I can see this turning into a problem if this kid comes over and all of a sudden the season doesn't end up in a Heisman winning situation. It's like, well, could you pick quarterbacks anyway? Or were you just bringing guys that you thought you wanted, guys who were good?
51%. Anyway. Also, it's not a television program.
53%.
Sure. Oh, wow. You guys are really, really sticking with man. This is a real.
The Price is Right rules here?
I was going to say.
Pretty sure. Unless it's 51 or 52, I'm screwed.
I'm losing, right. All right, what's next?
One thing that I do think is interesting before we move on is that Caleb Williams actually, in his statement about entering the transfer portal, he made it seem like it was just about his professional development, not about winning games, not about a Heisman Trophy, which makes it actually a little bit even more alluring to go to USC because,
you know,
Lincoln Riley has created, or not created, but helped foster the Kyler Murrays and Baker Mayfields of the world.
And I think that's also emblematic, though, of like the general mindset a lot of college football players and basketball players, for that matter, are going to take as we move into this NIL, like, transfer-friendly era of college sports, where like we start acknowledging the fact that this is pro sports.
Right. Right. I mean, I think you're right, June, but I think that does not help Lincoln Riley's cause. I mean, SC is a big program, but I mean, nobody's going to be paying attention when you're playing in Corvallis on a Thursday night. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a premier franchise. I mean, premier brand. The Pac-12 isn't when it comes to sort of the NIL and all that. So if that's where he's thinking, SC is not going to necessarily be the place for that, because it's pretty much going to be all football, because SC does not want these stars to be too big, which is the reason why Pete Carroll was a problem to begin with.
All right, guys, final topic. We have a clip for this one. What are the chances Kellen Mond should take this personally?
What do we got?
Do you want to get a look at Mond next week?
Not particularly. I see him every day.
Like, if you've ever seen a ceiling on a guy, that's what that looks like. It's like, oh, nope. I've seen him at his very best. I don't want to see anymore. Like, that's what a third-string quarterback is supposed to look like for a reason. That's sad.
The thing that I would feel bad about, though, if I was Kellen Mond, is like, this guy's a professional quarterback in the NFL. He's worked his entire life to get to this point where Mike Zimmer is just being like, yeah, not it.
Did you watch him play every day?
Did you guys watch that game? Did you see him play?
No. I heard Kirk Cousins was out.
If you did, you would understand. But let me, because again, apparently all I've been doing is watching sports television for the past 5 days because we haven't been doing anything. This reminds me of a fellow ESPN compadre show on Marty and McGee. They did Hillbilly Headlines. And one of the headlines was, wife shoots husband in foot because he wouldn't shut up. And apparently what he did was, she did this act and then got out on the porch and told the police, yeah, it was me. I did it. I can't stand him anymore. Big that energy from Mike Zimmer. I see him every day. Okay, I don't need this guy around. It's one of those kind of energies taken to a little lesser extent. But the look on his face when he said, I see him every day, I was like, oh, God. I do not – like, forget the football. Those two do not need to see each other in the hallway, period. They've been looking at each other too long, talking to each other too long. They need to get away from each other for a while. Not great. I would say 100% chance that he should take that personally, because there's nothing else to take from it.
It feels like it was already personal. Like, that's the worst thing I think I've heard a coach say about a quarterback. Like, has he just been insulting Zimmer, like, in practices and
it
whatnot?
It wasn't even diplomatic.
Mm-mm. Right. Oh, he liked the video. See, passive-aggressive nonsense. This is how people end up hurting people that they love. This is not okay, you know?
Like they need to have a couples therapist or something.
Right, exactly. I would agree with that.
99%.
You guys are too close. You guys are too close to my initial. Okay, that's fine. 107 is.
There's a slight chance that Kellen Mond is very much enlightened and will not take any of this personally. It will only grow from this, but more than likely, he's hurt by it.
If this was Cobra Kai, they would be ending this in a parking lot. Is what I'm saying.
Where did Kellen Mond go to college?
Excellent question. Anybody? Let me look that up right
Texas
now.
Texas A&M.
Texas A&M. Wait, did you know that?
No, this is – I have the Google page open right now.
Oh, of course you did. Good job. Does anybody have anything to plug? June,
follow
do you have
me on TikTok.
Okay, see, your TikToks are getting so good that we can't even make fun of you anymore for it. Izzy, what do you got going on?
I just got a text from the executive producer of this show. It said, Happy New Year. So apparently we are not friends yet. Thank you, Eric.
Perfect.
I can't say it back to you, though.
To end. I've got a column coming out soon. I went to the Bahamas and watched a baseball home run derby on the beach, kind of like where Izzy is. It was fun. You can read about it at The Undefeated.
How are you getting these assignments? Hello?
That's how. Pretty simple.
Take you on my boat next time.
No, I don't want to have to clean it up. Obviously, that's what you make me do.